She found out on a Tuesday, not from her hiring manager, not from the candidate she'd been passed over for, not from the HR rep who had sat across from her in the quarterly check-in 6 weeks earlier and told her that her trajectory in the organization was strong. She found out the way that most professional devastations arrive, sideways, in a context that had nothing to do with what was being revealed. She was on a reference call for someone she had personally recommended. The person conducting the call was asking standard questions, reliability, communication style, how the candidate handled pressure. She answered all of them honestly and warmly, the way she always did for people she believed in. And at the end of the call, the recruiter said something that wasn't a question. She said, "I see you recommended Marcus Weir highly about 18 months ago. He came back to us with some concerns after his experience there." "What concerns?" she asked. The recruiter caught herself, said she probably shouldn't have mentioned it, ended the call with the smooth professional pivot of someone who had said something they realized they shouldn't have. But it was enough. Marcus Weir had been her colleague. He had worked in her division. He had left on good terms, or she had believed he left on good terms, because that was what she had been told, and because the farewell lunch had happened the way farewell lunches happen, with cake and cards and the performance of mutual good feeling that professional environments require. And Marcus Weir had apparently gone to the firm where she had recommended him, and whatever he had said about her there had prompted that firm to send a concern back up the chain. She spent 3 days before she confirmed it. Not because she was uncertain, she was almost immediately certain, but because confirming it required her to do something uncomfortable. Contact people in her professional network directly and ask them whether they had ever heard anything about her that had given them pause. The answers she received in those 3 days reconstructed 18 months of her career with a clarity that was sickening. Reference sabotage is the professional harm that's almost impossible to document in real time because it operates entirely in the spaces between institutions, in conversations that are private, in references that are provided off the record, in the kind of verbal recommendation or verbal qualification that never produces a document with a name on it. When someone in your professional history is actively providing negative references, you learn about it the way she learned about it, in the accumulation of inexplicable outcomes. Job processes that ended without explanation after the reference stage, opportunities that your networking suggested were within your reach but that closed without feedback. The particular silence that follows a process that was going well until it wasn't. For 18 months, Marcus Weir had been the reason. The specific things he had said, the actual language of the references he'd been providing, she reconstructed partially through the conversations of those 3 days. The picture was not of dramatic accusations. That is the sophisticated version of this harm, not lies so large they can be contested, but qualifications so precise and so targeted that they produce doubt without generating defensible grievance. He had described her as someone who needed significant oversight on high-stakes projects. He had mentioned, in at least 2 documented instances, that he had heard concerns from people in her division, a piece of attributed doubt that implied a consensus that did not exist. He had, in at least 1 instance, suggested that her departure from a role several years earlier had been more complicated than what appeared on her resume. Every one of those statements was deniable as an opinion. None of them was the kind of direct, specific, falsifiable misrepresentation that creates clear legal exposure. All of them together constituted a systematic undermining of her professional reputation across a period during which she was actively applying for roles that required external reference checks and wondering why her results were so consistently inconsistent with her performance record. The legal landscape around reference sabotage is not what most professionals believe it to be. The common understanding is that employers can only confirm dates of employment and title to avoid defamation liability. This is not universally true. Most jurisdictions in the United States permit references that are honest and offered in good faith, meaning that a former colleague is legally protected in providing a negative reference if the negative statements are true and believed by the speaker to be true. The protection against defamation in reference contexts attaches when the statement is false and made with knowledge of its falsity or reckless disregard for truth. The problem with Marcus Weir's statements was not that they were clearly false. Some of them were sufficiently grounded in interpretation, in his characterization of situations he had observed and was now framing in the most damaging available light, that establishing falsity would have required reconstructing complex professional events through testimony and documentation. The heard concerns from people in your division language was the most damaging and the most difficult to address because it attributed a position to unnamed people who may or may not have held it, and the attribution itself was not verifiable in either direction. She consulted an employment attorney after those 3 days. The attorney was honest with her about the terrain. A defamation claim based on reference sabotage is one of the most difficult employment claims to bring, not because the harm is not real, it clearly is real, the career damage is documentable, but because proving the causation between the specific statements and the specific adverse outcomes requires evidence that the private conversations of reference calls are not designed to produce. You would need the employers who declined you to acknowledge that the reference was the reason. Employers do not provide this acknowledgement. What she had, the attorney told her, was a strong narrative and a difficult proof problem. What she eventually pursued was not a defamation claim. It was a different kind of pressure, systematic and deliberate. She spent 2 months documenting every conversation from those 3 days, every recruiter who had mentioned anything that could be connected to Marcus Weir, every timeline inconsistency in her job search. She sent that documentation to the firm where she had recommended him through their HR department with a formal letter noting that she had evidence suggesting a former employee was making professional misrepresentations in reference contexts in which her name was implicated. The firm's legal exposure, if one of their current employees was defaming a former colleague, was real, not enormous, but real enough to prompt a response. The response came in the form of a conversation with their HR director. That conversation's specifics are not public. What is public is that Marcus Weir left that firm 4 months later, with language in his departure announcement that described a new opportunity that nobody in their shared network was able to identify in the subsequent year. The references stopped. She has never gotten back the 18 months. The roles she didn't get during that period, the professional relationships that were damaged before she understood why they were cooling, the confidence that was eroded by outcome after outcome that didn't match her internal assessment of her own work, that material is gone. The damage is real, and it is not recoverable, the way a physical wound recovers, where tissue grows back and the original architecture is restored. A professional reputation moves in one direction or the other based on the inputs that shape it. 18 months of inputs, shaped by someone else's deliberate misrepresentation, left marks that accurate inputs are now correcting, slowly, in the way that reputational correction always works, one good outcome at a time, in the direction of something that most people will eventually no longer question. He did it because she had advanced and he hadn't. That's the version her attorney offered, and it's probably not wrong. The more interesting question is, did he know exactly what he was doing, or did he convince himself that what he believed about her was true enough to say? That question doesn't change the damage, but it changes whether this is a story about a weapon or a mirror.